This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Looking forward to all this entertainment and hope that you will be listening to us on KBOO or streaming on kboo.fm. And so glad to see all these lovely faces here.
Osio Yaptehean, hello. Glad to see you all here.
And this is going on until 10 o'clock, is it?
10:30.
So you have plenty of time to get down here, listeners.
And I am TJ Ravenwolf, and just want to say thank you all for coming, and we are live on KBOO.
Who are we going to have up first?
One of our speakers is activist, author, mother, artist, Charlene Tichette. She's come all the way up from Arizona, and I am honored and grateful for Charlene to be here. So whenever she's ready, would you please welcome Charlene Tichette.
Would you like a chair? One of these gentlemen can get one for you or stand. Thank you.
Thank you.
She has a lovely orange shawl on.
Thank you. This is my grandmother's shawl.
Wow.
And she died on her 94th birthday, which I thought that was very amazing. But she was my inspiration and continues to be my inspiration.
Oh, wonderful.
I really enjoy watching what you put on Facebook. I'm one of your Facebook friends. I like the sunrise pictures.
Oh, thank you. Well, I will talk about the sunrise pictures, and now we're on the sunset pictures, which are more of a challenge for me because I am a dawn person. Mm-hmm. But I also do the moon pictures and the mountain photos.
Yes, they're lovely.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so welcome.
Thank you.
What do you want our listeners on KBOO to know about you, Charlene?
You know, I think I could just go right into my talk that I planned,
that would
if that's
be great.
Okay, because, you know, my story, like many mixed blood and Indian people, women in Canada and America, our stories are, we tell them through our art and through our work and through our relationships with people in the communities. Can the slides come up here?
That's okay if the screen comes down in front of us.
We're
happy
problem.
With that. We're used to being on the radio and not being seen.
Right, exactly. So I did want to mention, while that's happening, is I wrote this book called It Stops With Me, Memoir of a Kanak Girl. It's an award-winning book. It was also banned in my hometown. It was on the 2006 American Library Association banned book list. And it was reinstated with help from Penn USA, Penn American Center, and the ACLU. And it was one other group. Oh, the ALA, the American Library Association First Amendment Rights Group. So I'm giving these books away today. Some people have already had them. And I'd like to offer other people, I have a few, you know, maybe 10 or so more left, and I encourage you to make a donation to any of the wonderful organizations here in the Portland area that help and spread the word on Indian issues, both land issues, indigenous rights issue, the salmon fishermen, and our arts issues. So if you want to go over afterwards, and I will sign a book for you, and I hope you will, in the spirit of my practices to give away, and I'll explain a little bit about that, how I came to that, but I hope that you will share that generosity with other people and pass it on. Thank you. So did the slides come up?
Yes.
My work, you know, the speech I want to give to you today or the talk I want to talk about is Returning to the Circle. This has been the path of my life. I come from a mixed blood family. I have Acadian, which is Mi'kmaq, and French-Canadian mix from the first families of mixed blood were born in 1605 in Nova Scotia. My grandparents and great-great-grandparents were part of the people who were dispersed in the first genocide in the New World of European and Native Canadian people, and in 1755 they were dispelled to the four winds. And so that's on several parts of my family. I'm also related on my grandmother's side, on my mother's, to the blood of the Blackfeet Confederacy, and they are from intermarried with the Lombards in the trading post on the Old Kootenai River above Standoff, which doesn't exist anymore. It was burnt down or taken down in 1971. I also have Abenaki background on my Touchette side, and I'm one of the many French Canadians. In fact, we number in over the millions who are mixed blood, have Native First Nations, and sometimes Native American Indian and French Canadian ancestry. We were raised, and I found, you know, in my work with different Native tribes and also different mixed blood people, we were all raised to really admonished from the time we were children to remember we were Indian. And they would say to us, "Souviens toujours que vous êtes Indian." And they said it to us regularly. They said it to all of us. They didn't just say it. My grandmother, when she told stories, she would comb her long hair. And some of these images you'll see are of a grandmother combing her hair and telling stories. And really, I learned storytelling at the knee of my grandmother. She had 18 grandchildren, and I was the oldest girl. So I was in a really honored position in that I was able to learn from her. And she, as I said, she died on her 94th birthday in 1998, after I was invited to Canada, where I was honored for my work with women artists, and particularly in honoring Native women artists of all different backgrounds. People such as the beloved Emily Wahenica from Warm Springs in 1993 in Seattle, the potters Lucy Lewis and Margaret Tafoya from the Southwest, who are two of the four pottery matriarchs, Mary Adams, who was honored in Queens at the Queens Museum in 1994, and at that time, both Mohawk chiefs from the Canadian and the American side came down and stood up in the audience in their full traditional dress and spoke in Mohawk. And Mary Adams received the award at the Queens Museum, an award that was first given to George O'Keefe and Louise Nevelson and other great women American artists at the White House by the Women's Caucus for Art, but during the Jimmy Carter era at the White House. When Mary Adams was honored and she spoke through an interpreter in Mohawk, tears were coming to the eyes of everyone in the audience, because most of the people had no idea that there were still people who only spoke their native language. Excuse me.
3 minutes.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I guess, you know, this is a little different than I had expected, but I'll just quickly tell you, you know, my journey has been to return to the circle, to reclaim that beautiful way of life that our grandparents suffered so much so that we could survive, so we could have a good life. And both the Canadian and the American government have done everything they can to tear that from us and to prevent us from reclaiming it. And people like me and the people I work with, we believe that our ancestors wanted us to reclaim this life, and we have. I'm gonna sing a song for you. Is the drummer here? Okay, great. Okay. I'm going to sing the song that was a gift to me after I went to Russell Means Memorial in Pine Ridge, and I was at the scattering of his ashes at Yellow Thunder Camp. And at that time, the medicine man, Leonard Crowdog, asked all the men and to say his name in English and all the women to say his name in Lakota. And when we said his name in Lakota, we looked up in the sky, and the brightest shooting star I'd ever seen crossed the sky, directly horizontal across the sky. And Leonard Krodok, the holy man, said, "Remember, you have seen this. Tell everyone you have seen this." And when we were out at Yellow Thunder Camp, we had to walk miles together with no light. There were hundreds of us here, the family and other people who were close enough to be family. And the reality of indigenous thinking and Indian thinking is that time does not exist the way that we would think it would exist. Everything past, present, and future exists in the same time. And the reality of being there, I felt that. My son felt that, who is with me, who's a sun dancer at Wind Cave with Russell Means and his family. So I want to share this song to you. On the way back, I was driving back to Santa Fe, and the birds were crossing. It was like just dawn. And like I said, I'm a dawn woman. And so I was given the song by the spirits. I heard it. I heard it on the wind. So we're going to sing the song, and these wonderful gentlemen are going to sing with me.
Wonderful.
Song. This was a song that was a gift to me. It's not a song only for Indians. It's a song for all people, because we are all indigenous to our Mother Earth. The Mother Earth is our real mother. Grandfather, father, son is our father, and Grandmother Moon is our grandmother. We are all related. And I just want to end with one thing. You know, when the Lakota say we are all related, ho, matakwease, all my relations, we're not kidding. And that's what I want to talk about and leave you with. When we say all my relations, we mean all, no exceptions. And that means not only the two-leggeds, but all of the beings on the earth, the stone people, the plant people, the standing people, the trees, four-leggeds, the crawling people, the birds, every living being. And the way that we're related is on an energetic way of, you know, like the quantum physics, you know, we are related the way that the sun and the moon have a loving relationship to each other. We are supposed to have a loving relationship with each other, and love is the thing that can ignite that. And that's where we need to be in the future. We're at the point of a paradigm shift. If we don't shift back to indigenous ways of love, respect, and sharing, and compassion, we may not survive as human species on this planet. But I'll leave you with one thing of hope that Russell Means said the first time he and I spoke on a podium together. And he said that no matter what happens, there will be Indians somewhere.
Right on.
They may be Peruvians up in the Andes, or maybe they'll be Lakota at Wind Cave, but there will be Indians on this earth. And we need to get back to the beginning, to the things that worked for 10,000 and more years before the conquest, before this way of dysfunction and competition and conquest. We know how to live. Our ancestors knew how to live. That's why they survived for over 10,000, maybe 50,000 years, according to the Anishinaabe. So I just want to leave you with that. I love you all. No exceptions. You are all my relations. You're all my brothers and sisters. You elders are my grandparents, and all the children are my children. And I hope that you will take that to heart and realize no matter what the color of your skin or your background or what your ancestors did in the past, you have the right today to change that path and to start being people who are called human beings and know how to be in loving relationship with each other, with our Mother Earth, our water, and our sky, and all of the beings on this earth. Thank you.
Wado.
Thank you, Shirley.
Akwiasin. That's bringing the medicine from the dead. Thank you.
Words of wisdom from Charlene Touchette.
That was Charlene Touchette. We are live at the Northwest Indigenous Experience Northwest. We're about to have a blessing of the meal. Then we'll be back with your hosts of Tilikum Wawa, Shisley and Eugene, who are live on stage for this live broadcast from the Indigenous Experience Northwest. They're going to have a blessing of the meal right now. So we're going to play a little bit of music, and we'll be back with the storytellers, Esther Stutzman and Ed Edmo, coming up in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
Right shoulder, pull. Left shoulder, thank you.
The Indian warrior never returned home, but his spirit is still riding high on top of Eagle Hill, looking toward the sunrise.
And welcome back to the Indigenous Experience Northwest. And we're gonna be listening to a very honored and beloved storyteller, Esther Stutzman. But first, Gilbert Brown is going to tell us about his upcoming engagement. Not to a woman, but...
well, my name's Gilbert Brown. Yes, I am a real-life USDA Choice Native American from Canada.
And he is from another Indian Uprising movement.
Yeah, that's our comedy group, AnotherIndianUprising.com. Check us out online. Just hit promo and you can check out our stuff. With Jim Rule, who was on the Showtime special, and Shoshonia Livingston.
We love Indian humor. We need more.
Yep.
Well,
so, what's your upcoming program?
June 13th, I'm going to be at Jubit's Truck Stop with the founder of Powwow Comedy Jam, Mark Yaffe. And we're having a show from 7 to 9. It's only $5, so come on out, get your laugh on. Another Indian Uprising, and it's powwow time.
Right on. Have you got a quick joke for us?
Another joke. Oh, man. You want a one-liner?
Sure.
That's well-behaved?
Yes. That's FCC appropriate.
Yeah. And they're called reservations.
Think I've got a few.
I'm just saying. But but I got to make like an Indian and be Gandhi. It's been my pleasure. Please come out to Delta Park, support our powwow here in Portland, and have a great night.
Thanks, Gilbert Brown.
Let's go out and support him. We need more Indian humor.
So Esther is, Esther Stutzman, well, first of all, she was my kid's camp counselor. I don't know how you survived that, but we do know how to sing squirrely in my house. Thank you. She's a Coos and Kalapuya Indian and enrolled in the Siletz tribe, lives in Yankala, and she is a requisite storyteller, and she's going to grace us with a story now. Thank you so much, Esther Stutzman.
Thank you so much. I love telling stories because they teach lessons. Stories help us to remember our history, and stories are always something that's entertaining. I grew up listening to stories, and I'd like to tell one of my very favorite stories. In fact, it was one of the first stories I ever remember hearing. As I grew older, I kind of researched this type of a story. And this type of a story actually exists everywhere from Alaska all the way down into Mexico. And this main character is a woman who, through some carelessness of her own, lost her children or caused her children to die. And so she is getting revenge against other children. There are stories all along the Pacific coast. In Mexico, she's called the Crying Woman. She's known as Zunacua in some places, the Basket Lady, the Clamshell Lady. And my father's people on the Oregon coast, among the Coos, used to call her the Dark Lady, or Pitch Pilcus, because she would steal children and she would eat them. She thought that if she ate these children, she could taste perhaps her own kin, that maybe these were the children she lost and they would be a part of her. And so this is a cautionary story to children to be respectful. And I was told this story when I was a kid, and I was so afraid, because I knew that if I wasn't respectful, the Dark Lady would come and get me. So this is the way I heard the story from my grandma. You see, it was a very, very long time ago, and there was a village out by the ocean. And in this village of many, many people, there lived a little boy and a little girl. And they lived with mother and with grandmother. Now, they didn't have a father because father had gone out into the ocean fishing. And a storm came up and his canoe tipped over and he never came home. And because of this, the children had no father. Everyone spoiled them. No one made them do any kind of work. Why, everyone in the village would be making baskets and bringing in the water, and these children were so lazy that all they did was sleep all day long in the nice cool lodge. And when it got to be nighttime, they'd wake up and go right out on the beach to play. This is how it happened this one special summer. The children were so lazy that they would sleep all day and play all night and sleep all day and play all night. And it wasn't long before everyone in that village was making fun of this family. The family had lazy children. So one day the grandmother said to the mother, "You must go talk to the dark lady." Well, now, mother knew about the dark lady, knew how mean she was, but she got her courage together and she went off to the dark lady's lodge in the woods and she made a deal with her. She said, "I will give you 3 salmon if you take my children and just scare them, make them agree to come home and not be lazy anymore." Well, the dark lady thought about that and she agreed. So mother went back to the village, and sure enough, the very next day, everyone, even the children in the village, were making baskets and helping with the firewood and the food, and these 2 children, this little boy and this little girl, were so lazy that they were sleeping in their lodge all day long. Well, when it came to be night, they got up. And they went out to the beach and they started to play. And they were digging around in the sand and playing with shells and starfish and having such a good time when suddenly behind them they heard a noise. And they turned around and running down the beach came a horrible, ugly old woman with no eyes and long hair. And a skirt that was made out of cedar bark with pitch on that skirt. And she ran up to the little boy and little girl, and she wrapped that pitch skirt around them and took them off to her lodge in the woods. And she pulled them off of her skirt and she threw them in a corner and said, "Now you'll be my slaves. And if you don't do what I tell you, then I'm going to eat you." Well, the children were afraid, of course. They knew about the dark lady. They knew how mean she was. The dark lady said, "Little boy, go get some wood." Well, the little boy was so scared, he just hugged his sister tight. And the dark lady said, "Little girl, go get some water." Well, the little girl just started to cry. She was so afraid. And the dark lady, thinking about the 3 salmon that she would get from mother for doing this, she thought, "Maybe we should sleep a while, and when we wake up, I'll really scare them and really make them agree to go home and not be lazy anymore." So before she went to sleep, she went outside and she put a ring, a powerful ring of magic around it, just in case the children tried to get away. And so she went to sleep. Not for very long. When she woke up, she looked around that dark old lodge and she saw some firewood and some baskets. And over there where she'd put the children, all she saw was a pile of deer skins. And she said, "They tried to escape." Well, she knew that her powerful ring of magic would stop them. So she went outside and was walking down through the woods looking for the children. when right in front of her she came upon a little tiny baby bird that had fallen from its nest. Oh, how she loved those little birds. They were so delicious to eat. And she picked up that little bird and was just about to eat it when something right inside that old mean heart of hers changed. She said, "I can't eat this little bird. It's helpless and it's frightened. I'll use my special magic and I'll turn this little bird into a big bird that's afraid of nothing." And she did. Her magic turned that bird into a great big hawk that flew away, taking the magic with it. Just as that hawk flew over the dark lady's house, it dropped off. And that magic went inside the house and looked around and saw the baskets and the firewood and over there what the dark lady thought was just a pile of deer skins. That magic saw two frightened little birds peeking over the edge of those deer skins. You see, it was the children. They didn't try to get away. They were so afraid that they'd pulled those skins up over their head. And because that magic was supposed to turn little birds into big birds, that's exactly what it did. It turned that little boy and little girl into birds. But it turned them into a very special kind of bird. It's a kind of bird that sleeps all day long and is awake all night. And that's how we get owls. And my grandma said that we should never hurt owls because it might be the spirit of those children. Most of all, my grandma told me to always be respectful and don't go outside at night. And that's her story.
Great.
Thank you so much. I enjoy telling stories, and if you tell stories of any kind, even if they're a modern story, please tell them to your children, because it's so important to remember where we came from, and learning these stories is a perfect way to remember who we are. Thank you.
Thank you, Esther.
Does she have time to tell another one? Yeah, why don't you tell another story? Could you tell us another story?
Or do you feel like it? That would be great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that story I told was from the Coos people. I'd like to tell you one now from the Kalapuya people. Kalapuya people were once the largest Indian tribe in Western Oregon. There were once 15,000 people who inhabited the Willamette Valley. And this is a story from the Kalapuya people. And it involves a time, a long time ago, when animals could talk and animals taught us all kinds of lessons. And in this time, a long time ago, animals lived in villages. There was a village for the bear and a village for the deer and for the elk. And in this one village of bears, oh, they had plenty to eat. They lived by a big, deep river, and they'd catch the fish, and they'd dig the roots and pick the berries, and everything was good for them until one day when an old bear girl came in, and she decided she'd live in this village. And she loved to eat. If everyone in that village would eat three baskets of berries, she'd eat four all by herself. And if everyone in that village decided they would eat four fish, she'd eat five all by herself. And she ate and she ate and she ate and got bigger and bigger and bigger. Usupi, we call it. She got so usupi that she could hardly pull both of those tails around. And I know there are some people who are thinking, both tails? Well, I thought everyone knew that bears had two tails a long time ago. Each fairly small, very short, but this bear girl was so usupi from eating so much that each tail was round and long and Of course, when she walked, she'd have to reach behind her and pull one tail and then pull the other tail, and she wound up waddling, and that's why bears waddle, you know. Well, she ate and ate and ate everything. She pulled the bark from the trees and the grass from the ground, and it wasn't long before all of the food was gone. There were no fish. All the berries were gone. The roots were dug up. And one morning, while she was still sleeping, the rest of the bear people woke up. And they looked outside, and as far as they could see, there was nothing but rocks and dirt and old dead trees. The bear girl had eaten everything. Oh, what are we going to do, they thought. There's no food here. And they looked around, and they thought about it, and they talked about it. And then they looked across that wide, deep river. And over there, the fish were swimming on that side. And they could even see berries over there. And they knew there had to be lots of tender roots. And so they said, let's swim across that river and build our village on the other side. The bear girl can't follow us. Why, those tails are so big and she's so soupy, she'd sink right under the water. So they decided this is what they're going to do. They all swam across the river and they started picking berries and catching fish, and it was so good to have food. Well, the old bear girl woke up and she looked all around her lodge. Oh, she was hungry. And her berry basket was empty, and the root basket was empty, and no fish in her fish basket. Oh, I'm so hungry, she thought, and she waddled out of her lodge, and she looked around, and as far as she could see, there was nothing but rocks and dirt and old dead trees, and she said, where is everyone? And there's no food here. Oh, what am I going to do? Where is everyone? And she looked around, and across that big, wide, deep river, she saw all of the other bear people. And they were eating berries and catching fish. Oh, she said. And she kind of waddled all the way down to the river, and she tried to wave to them, but of course they didn't pay any attention to her. Oh, what am I going to do? She thought. I'm hungry, and there's nobody here. And she started to feel sorry for herself and got sadder and sadder and started to cry a little bit and sat down with her back against an old dead tree, and she cried herself to sleep. Now, while she was sleeping, along came Coyote. Now, we know Coyote loves to play tricks, especially on the bears because they get so mad. But, you know, there was no one there except the old bear girl. And she was sitting sound asleep with her back against that old dead tree and one tail on one side of the tree and one tail on the other side. And Coyote had an idea. He sneaked up behind her and he pulled those tails around the back of the tree and tied him in a knot. Oh, he said, this will be a good trick. She won't be able to get loose. So he went to hide. Pretty soon, Bear Girl woke up and looked around, and while she was sleeping, she'd had a dream. In her dream, she just leaped across that river and landed on the other side, and there was food there, and her friends were there. Oh, what else can I do? She said. So she just tucked her legs underneath of her and gave the biggest leap of her life, and she jumped all the way across that river, landed on the other side. She said, I'm so thankful to be here. I will never, ever eat too much again. And she didn't. She always shared her food. But guess what she left behind? Her tails. They stayed tied around that tree for so long through all the weather that they turned into a brown, fuzzy moss that grows on oak trees. We call it bear moss. And if you've ever seen the skeleton of a bear, on some of them you'll see where the tailbone is. And sitting right beside it is a little bump. That's where the other tail used to be. And that's the story of why bears only have one very short tail. Thank you.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Esther. And now we are privileged to hear from Swill Canem. That's the way we've been
saying it. It's a Native American name. It's two words, but it's one name, kind of like Sitting Bull.
Yeah.
Only my wife says it's more like sits on the couch too long.
Ah.
Yeah, so it's my long name, Swill Canem. And if you want to say it in the traditional Native American way, you say it with a cheesy smile on your face, like, Swill Canem. Like that. That's how you say it in the traditional way.
Yeah. What language is it?
What language?
Yeah.
It's Wehlemi Chosin, which is Lummi language.
Yeah. Ah.
So it's the Lummi language. I'm from the Lummi tribe, not Lumbi tribe, Lummi tribe, near Bellingham, Washington. That's where I'm from.
And you looks like you brought a little friend with you there.
Yeah, I brought my violin. It's a real violin. It was actually made on the reservation by an old man who I don't know this for a fact, but I do believe he was on a witness protection program, and he was retrained as a violin maker. And he showed, you know, I drove by his house many times, and he, you know, he had a violin actually on his mailbox, and somebody took a baseball bat and smashed it to pieces.
Wow.
And I thought, I got to meet that guy. And then he had a whole new violin up there. And then I thought, I got to meet that guy. And then somebody took another baseball bat and smashed it to pieces. And then I thought, I really got to meet that guy. And then he put up a whole new violin. And I said, oh, that does it. I'm going to go meet that guy. And I walked into his house. And he said, what do you think of my violin out there now? And I said, it's great. And he walked me out there. He had a peg leg, and he walked me out there with his peg leg going through his wet yard. It was kind of funny in its own way. And then he got down to it, and he said, look at this violin closely. And I did. And in the F holes of the violin, you could see that he had filled it with concrete. And I laughed. Uh-huh. I said, that's going to be hard on somebody's bat. And then he said, oh, wait, that's not all. I used to be an iron worker. And it's reinforced with rebar. And so that's the story of this violin. It's a real blessing. He made it for me after playing his other instruments for years. And so basically it's a custom violin.
Yeah. Wonderful. Nice.
What are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play the violin.
What song?
That violin.
Yeah, I'm going to play the violin with a bow. Because it's an Indian instrument.
Are you in the bow and arrow club?
It's got a
on
bow.
On Friday nights?
See? Yeah, it's an Indian instrument. What?
Are you in the bow and arrow club on Friday nights?
No, I don't have an arrow.
Okay.
You got a point there, though. Get it? Arrow, point. Okay. I'm going to play
Where's
a piece
Gilbert
that
Brown,
is actually, it was featured in a movie called The Business of Fancy Dancing. Anybody here see it?
Yeah.
Oh, you're the person that saw it. It was a movie called The Business of Fancy Dancing, and I played a part of a disgruntled Indian violinist on that movie, and I know it's a stretch, but I pulled it off. I'm going to play a piece that was featured in that, and it's also the third movement of the Swill Canem Symphony, and it was premiered recently as part of a link-up program in Everett, Washington, link-ups associated with the Carnegie Hall, and I was really lucky about that. And so this piece is called Abord Andante. It's the third movement of the Swill Canem Symphony. Thank you.
play another one, aren't you? What are you putting that down for?
We're good to go for another one?
Yeah, absolutely. After something like that, we have to.
Okay, I got... how much time do I got?
I don't know.
Approximately? Okay, excellent. So this is a piece I wrote. I generally play original compositions. I've made a lot of less than honorable choices in my life, and if you can imagine. I've hurt people with my actions because I was hurting inside. And one way, I didn't have the courage when I was a young man to feel my own feelings. So I'd hurt people around me until they felt, I could see in their eyes, that they were feeling the way that I wanted to feel. If I was sad, I'd make them sad. If I was angry, I'd make them angry. And as a slightly older man, I've learned that a man feels his own feelings, and that a man can cry. So I wrote this piece as a reflection of that possibility. It's called You Can Cry. And I dedicate it to all the men, any man that's ever heard Boys Don't Cry.
Amazing. Thank you, Swole.
Thank you so very much. I just got to say, since we're on KBOO, is that right? KBOO 90.7, is that right? Something like that?
Portland, Oregon.
Some of those, somewhere else. Since we're on the radio, I think it's my responsibility to say that a public school music program saved my life. If it wasn't for a public school music program, I don't believe as a young man that I would have been able to eventually process the traumas of my early childhood as a foster kid. It wasn't anything against my foster parents or the foster system. It was really about, as a Native American, being pulled away from his culture and being told that by the rest of society that I'm less than. And music helped me to do that in a public school music program. And what I've heard from my elders is that evidence that I know who I am is that I'm educated, and how I know who I am is from my culture. And I think that's what's really amazing about the Indigenous Experience Northwest gathering, as I'm surrounded by people here that know who they are and are willing to share how they know who they are with the people around us. And it's a beautiful experience, and it's not too late to show up here, right? There's things going on all night.
Yep, Scottish Rite Center, 1512 Southwest Morrison.
That's right.
Get down here now.
You can beautiful get your facility. Tickets at the door.
Because yeah, Ed Mosel has to get up here and tell his stories. Where is Ed? Ed, you out there?
Yeah, he's right there, right behind you.
Oh, there he is.
Ed Edmo, come
Ed
on
Edmo.
In.
And,
the great Ed Edmo.
I was looking at the wrong clock, so I think we as Tulikum Wawa have to sign off now. So if any of you are listening, get down here now, 1512 Southwest Morrison, and listen to Ed Edmo. He's one of the greatest storytellers I've ever heard.
Oh, absolutely. And he was a great friend of the late, great John Talley.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hello.
This is Eugene.
And Shusley. And Etsayona.
You've been listening to Tulikum Wawa, KBOO 90.7 FM. Thank you.
See you next week.
All right, the Tax Resisters League will tell you how to stop paying taxes, but first, Hard Knock Radio on KBOO Portland, where Anita Johnson is speaking with organizers of the Ma'anue Conference, and Davey D speaks with R&B songstress Guapale. So don't touch that radio dial and stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Passport to Empowerment, a benefit party to raise money for green empowerment. Guests will raise funds for renewable energy and water projects in remote villages globally. Passport to Empowerment will bring together volunteers and sustainable development leaders to learn about their international projects, while also enjoying cocktails, food from around the world, a live salsa band, hookah lounge, and dancing till late. Two ticket levels allows for anyone to attend this event on Saturday, June 1st, at The Colony, 7575 North Richmond Avenue in St. John's. The event starts at 5:30. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Particles on the Wall.
An exploration of the effects of nuclear technology on the Pacific Northwest and the world.
Particles on the Wall.
An exhibit of art, literary works, science, and historical memorabilia that describes the human and environmental impact of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Particles on the Wall.
May 3rd through June 14th. Second floor gallery in the Eco Trust building.
Particles on the Wall.
Co-sponsored by Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and KBOO Community Radio.
Particles on the Wall.
Information can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
On Sunday, June 2nd, 2013, at 5 p.m., Lynn Fitch, the KBOO station navigator, will make a special public service announcement at the KBOO Community Radio Station, 20 Southeast 8th, off Burnside and 8th in Southeast Portland. This 15-minute special announcement will also interrupt regularly scheduled programming and be broadcast live due to its significant nature and importance to the community, KBOO members, volunteers, and hosts. It will also be translated into Spanish. Please join me at the station or listen online or 90.7 FM KBOO. Thank you.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
It's history. It's history. Never been done before. Never been done
in this country.
In this country.
What's up, fam? You're tuned to Hard Knock Radio here on the Pacifica Network. Up next, we'll speak with organizers about the upcoming Moana Nui Conference, scheduled to take place this Friday through June the 2nd. And then later on, R&B sensation, Bay Area homegirl, Wapole. I'm Anita Johnson. All this and more ahead.
This is M1 from Dead Press.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from the Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance. Down with this rotten-ass system.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you. Bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. News, views, and hip-hop.
Peace and love. This is Azeem. You're listening to Hard Knock Radio. Real radio. From the concrete up. All the way to the sun. Keep shining, y'all. One love.
What's up, folks? This is your girl, Femi, representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. I'm Anita Johnson. As globalization pivots across the Pacific, it is no longer sufficient to speak specifically about working to protect local cultures and traditional practices. The need to engage in a more in-depth dialogue with individuals who are confronted by the larger hegemonic battles of the United States versus China. Now, in November 2011, the Mauna Nui gathering was held in Honolulu with the intent and purpose to respond to some